Hey, Brian, I was born in 82. I'm not a millennial. I don't give a damn what anybody says or what something.
When were you born in 82?
February. Remember Showbiz Pizza? Where they like would spank the kids on their birthday?
Yeah.
I threw that in there and I was like, and I asked, I said, I'm 36, who's old enough to be my dad? And then a couple of guys raised their hands and I was like, why did you do this to your children? Some creepy dude in a bear suit, you let him spank your kids. Like, how fucked up was the 80s? Hey, Allie, Miss Capra. Miss Capra, do you have a snack?
What kind of snack?
Anything you hand me, I'm going to eat.
One of them is safer for us.
Hey, whatever, I don't care. Just hand something to me. No.
You said not that kind.
Not the granola.
I'm driving. I can't eat granola while I'm driving.
Awesome. I literally said, but it's the kind that's chunky and sticks together. And you said, okay, I don't care, whatever.
So I was talking, we were talking about a bar.
Dude, did we get this on tape? I hope this is recording right now.
It's recording.
That was awesome.
So, Carl, I was talking on this subject about things turning negative. And Brian, since you're sitting there, I'm ready to include you. Did you guys see my post about the positivity, like surround yourself with positivity?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. I liked it.
It makes a big difference.
It makes a huge difference.
And then like surrounding yourself with people that believe in you.
Yeah.
You know, that are positive about you.
Yeah, it's imperative.
Carl, what's your opinion? Why do you think there's so many veterans that go dark and then just go out like down this like negative hole?
You mean go dark, you mean like in communication or you mean bad attitudes?
Not like go dark like operational.
This communication thing we're working on here. I'll make sure I understand what you're asking.
Like why do guys just go down like the dark side, like the negative path, and they just like can't bring themselves to just have a positive outlook on life? Because it makes such a big difference. I've seen it in my personal life.
I think it goes down to internal self-talk. And when you think about the situations that are in front of you, your questions that you ask yourself become really important.
Oh, right. I see you teeing up to something here.
I don't want to, you know, I want to set it up a little bit without just going straight into it. But since you asked the question.
That was not planned, by the way.
But it's so common.
Yeah.
Because you have somebody that was part of a tremendous team that put the safety and welfare of their comrades over their own, that chose to serve the nation post 9/11, even knowing that we were at war and knowing that veterans have issues and the VA doesn't take care of them. But all of these things, you still go in, and you're part of this thing that, kind of, when you're on your way out, a lot of times you're like, I don't even want to look in the rearview mirror and see the post because I'm done.
Oh, yeah, that's right? What I was.
But.
And you were too.
I was too, yeah. Sure. You lose an opportunity, you experience a failure, and it starts a chain reaction in your head when you're not able to immediately move into a level of success like you enjoyed when you're in the military. The chain reaction in your head starts saying things like, why can't I be as proficient as I used to be? Why can't I be part of a team like that? Why can't I make a difference? Why can't I get a job? Why can't I stop drinking? And all of those why questions, you've heard me say this probably a million times.
Yep.
If your internal self-talk is why something, if you can answer that starting with because, you have created an excuse and a reason to stay where you are.
Hey, you're like, oh, well, it's because this is why. So I'm off the hook.
It's because my last boss was a dick, or it's because I hurt my back, or it's because I saw some terrible things while I was in combat. Whatever it is.
And everybody does that.
Yeah, but that makes it okay. Makes it okay to, even though you set an objective, usually you just make a goal to stop drinking, right? You don't set an objective because an objective has a plan. and a goal is something that you just hope to achieve.
Right.
So you set a goal, which is something that you hope to achieve, but you really don't understand what you're doing to try to get there, and you don't understand the impact of your internal self-talk on achieving that or not achieving that. And then you get to, you see something on television at night when you're relaxing in your house and you haven't had a drink in 2 days, or somebody says something that sets you off, or you're having a little trouble getting to sleep, and so you end up taking a shot of whiskey or drinking a beer or whatever, even if you didn't plan to do it. And then you start beating yourself up. Why did I do that? Why was I so weak? Why can't I stop that habit that I'm trying to resolve? And then the answer comes back, well,
because
you need that so you can sleep. Yes, it's bad. Yes, it's going to kill you in the long run. It's going to destroy relationships, but it's okay because it helps you go to sleep.
Right.
And that reason, that excuse, keeps you anchored where you don't want to be, but you don't understand how to get out of it. And I really believe that it's a simple combination of things, that having a very strong visual internal picture of what you want to become, what you see your life being.
And I think that's a big issue too, because I think a lot of guys don't even know that.
Yes, absolutely right.
I think it's the way we're trained. We're trained and programmed in a way that it's hard to take years or decades of the way we're programmed, because if you look at how we're trained, like, weakness is not tolerated in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
You have a laser focus on your job and your identity and what you're doing, and so now when you transition out, and you lose
zero defect mentality.
Yeah, you have a zero defect mentality, but what happens when you lose your laser focus and you're programmed, okay, what's our steps for being wounded, okay? Self-aid buddy aid coordinate, right? So we take that mentality of zero defects, we take that laser focus, and we take that self-aid, you know, coordinate or buddy aid coordinate with us, and like, for me, I still struggle with like asking for help. I still struggle with like admitting, like,
you know, it makes noise when you run over that thing in the middle of the road.
I'm trying, there's ruts in here. I'm trying to flip this whole thing.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I just think that the mentality of like not having, you know, being able to show any weakness when you get out and you start to crumble and break down because you don't have that laser focus, you don't have a mission, you've lost your identity. Think the wheels start to come off the bus, and now you're not programmed to go admit that you have a problem, because that's admitting weakness. Weakness isn't tolerated.
And what focus do you usually put? What veterans that you see transitioning out there going through that, when they develop a laser focus, what is it usually that you see?
Something negative. It's usually when they start to spiral down, they'll laser focus on.
I see
alcohol.
Something before that. I see a laser focus on a significant other. It's a partner. Right. It's okay, so I can't be a raider anymore, I can't be a ranger anymore, but I've got the best looking girl in town.
Right.
Right? And that isn't usually, that relationship probably didn't develop in a very meaningful way. It was probably a casual hookup at a bar that turned into a relationship. But now your identity goes from this to now this, because you got this, your career was on a pedestal, now this person is. And then, because of the things you're talking about, when you're self-medicating, the alcohol, the whatever is going on, you're having trouble getting or keeping a job, money problems are tight, you can't get the kind of care that you need because you're trying to do the self-care first, that significant other says, dude, I'm done. I've told you to go get help. I've told you to do this. I've told you to do that. You're not doing it. I'm out of here. And when I see a veteran that posts on social media that she just left, that sends up all kinds of red star clusters, right? Because that guy's thinking about killing himself, because that was the last thing that he had.
Yeah, strike two on losing his losing what he's focused on.
Right.
Maybe strike three or four or five or six, you know. So yeah, I think it has a lot to do with the way we're programmed, and when we lose all of that transitioning out, it's super difficult.
So I like, can you say your analogy about the bike? We're talking about that, like, all having excuses and how you are giving yourself excuses.
Oh yeah, as a matter of fact, shameless plug, I talk about this in my book, Common Sense Transition.
Oh, we're gonna get to that. Yeah, we're gonna get to that. I'll have the link below.
Yeah, so
for the book.
So the Burris functional emotional fitness program that we use that is incorporated into the 5 Gallup functional fitness points of STAR. Emotional fitness is a huge piece of that. And that training teaches you to identify what your internal self-talk is and how to turn that into something that's positive that moves you towards achieving your objective instead of holding you back from it. And we were on a retreat 2 years ago, and I went through a couple of hours of training these guys on Burris. At that time, I think he called it emotional wellness because I got him to change the terminology in all of his materials to fitness.
Yeah.
But I'm going through all of this, and I'm telling these guys how to visualize and how don't be negative, don't ask negative questions, and keep it positive. And then I had just started, I'd just gotten a brand new bike, like 6 or 7 months before.
Is that when you had just started riding?
Yeah, that was when I first started riding.
Okay.
And I didn't know how fast I could ride. I didn't understand the dynamics of it. But I knew that because I like to drink craft beer to moderation, that if I didn't start doing something, that I was going to weigh 800 pounds in about a year. So, because I can't run, so I decided to start biking. And I get back the next morning, I hop on my bike, and I have set a goal for myself because my mind terminology was still wrong then. So I had a goal of riding 20 miles, and I wanted to keep an average 15-mile-an-hour pace, which was a stretch for me to get to a 15-mile-an-hour pace. I'm beyond that now, I'm glad to say, but at that time, that was a stretch. So I get on the bike, and I'm 3 or 4 miles in, and my earbuds announce that your average pace is 14.2 miles per hour. And immediately, I'm in my head, I go, why can't I keep a 15-mile-an-hour pace? That's my goal.
And then
my mind says, well, it's because you were in Colorado on this retreat for the last couple of days. You're probably dehydrated. You got off the plane last night. Your time zone's off. All of these things were giving me permission to not try to achieve that goal because I had all these reasons why it was okay for me not to do it. But as soon as I caught it, then I interrupted it with, all right, what do I need to do to ensure that I'm getting a 15-mile-an-hour pace? How can I increase my speed per mile? And then the answer is just like somebody opened up a faucet because it's like, well, hydrate, use the hills, watch the gears. All these things start running through my mind, and I finished that. I think I went 22 or 23 miles that day and had a 15.3 or 4 mile an hour. It was the fastest that I've ridden, the farthest that I've ridden since I got the bike. And if I had stayed stuck in the negative self-talk, I probably would have knocked it off at 10 and had a 14-mile-an-hour pace, gone home and had a beer.
Yes, I was going to say, go have another craft beer. Yeah.
I think that makes all the difference. Going back to what you said, why does it happen?
All by just changing the narrative.
Well, yeah, but when you think about when you're on, were we wanting to make a turn there?
Hold on.
It's okay.
We're good.
Good job.
Good job.
Got it.
Woo! We didn't wreck.
We're going west.
Yeah. Whoa. Need to adjust the cameras here? Put some shades on at least. There we go.
Well, I think in terms of also having someone that you surround yourself with that's a positive influence on you and is a positive person, it's also having security and the trust to like let down your guard with those people and just be completely raw and just completely let it hang out and not have any fear of judgment. Because I mean, going back to the way we're programmed, you know, and having showing no weakness at any time, you walk around and you don't know that all your brothers or all your, you know, guys from your community are hurting and sucking in the same way, but nobody wants to talk about it, nobody wants to admit it because I'm good, bro. How you doing, man? Oh, I'm good, bro.
I'm a tough guy.
I'm good, bro. And so you're constantly saying you're good all the time. Nobody, at least with the group of people that, you know, I was running with for a while, they didn't, you know, none of us would have talked to each other about what was really going on with ourselves. And so, you know, and then it just like, when we did open up and talk about stuff, it
was, it was negative. You know, it was all negative. It was, it just perpetuated negativity and caused a spiral of cyclical negative energy.
So what is, Carl, what's your opinion on editing your circle? Like, so you change your thought process, you change the narrative in your head to, and I talk a lot about this, about like, if you've got negative people in your life, it's not personal, but you got to cut them out, especially if they're not wanting to go down the positive road with you. And that can be very, very hard to do, because you can genuinely care about those people. And there's a lot of people that I've cut out of my life that I genuinely care about. But I mean, they are just like a, they are a black hole of negativity. And no matter what I do, I can't change them. You know, that's their belief system and their thought process, the way they live their life.
Yeah, so one of the things that Burris would tell you is your internal questions. And the Burris techniques develop a very structured way to ask questions about things in your life that you want to change or that you want to impact. And Burris would say, if there is a particular relationship or number of people, group of people in a relationship that you're struggling with, then you should be asking yourself questions like, what can I do to be a better role model for that group? Or what can I do to, it's all on what can I do, not what can I make them do,
right?
Or what can they do, it's what can I do.
Right.
And it might be, you know, there can be a contradiction in questions because like you said, if they're holding you back, one of the questions that you might need to ask yourself is, what do I need to do to move myself professionally forward, or what do I need to do to become more emotionally stable?
Yeah.
And the answer that comes back might be you need to shed these people.
Just a better human being.
That's right. Yeah. And it's not, like you said at that point, it's not personal because it's not about them. It's about you.
Right.
So that goes back to the girl breaks up with a guy, right? And she's like, oh no, it's not you, it's me. But it's a hard thing to take, but.
I know from my personal experience, you know, and you've seen me go through all this.
Yeah.
When I've cut those, like, I tried to hang on to everybody. I just wanted to be friends and be happy and be with everyone. But unfortunately, it's just not the way it works.
You can't do it.
And once I, you know, got burned a little bit, but once I did have, like, you know, changed my way of thinking, changed my narrative, started thinking more positively, and I edited my circle to where, like, you know what, this is what's best for me and my family. And now I pretty much, like that post today with all of you guys and everybody here, and you know, my team on the business side, both the Raider Project and the business side, like, things are really awesome. And not only that, but they get all, it's like a there's a huge ROI with it as well. And it's just like, it's like a compounding interest of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Based off just positive people every day. Like, we go
Thank
to the office.
Train. Yeah, that's very nice.
Yeah.
Making some good dividends in the karma bank.
Yeah.
Is what I call it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I show up to work and like, we've got Johnny there, we've got employees there, and everybody that comes in is just like super excited about everything we have going on all the time. And even so, when things that happen that are negative, it's just kind of like,
well, what the number one thing that Burris encourages you to learn how to do is to live in a spirit of love.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the, it's not the sexual kind of love, it's the,
right,
it's the being one with the universe, karma, like you said, it's that kind of love. And it's not, when you have to terminate a relationship like that, you have to be able to do it out of a sense of love, both for you and the other person.
Right.
And not post something nasty on social media that so-and-so's a
nutted. No, that's absolutely ridiculous. That's not
what
I'm
but there are people that do that, right? Yeah. So you see...
That's not how you edit a circle.
You see political discussions all the time where somebody, because they voted a certain way or because they believe a certain thing about gun control, now so-and-so posted something like, you're an idiot, and then, you know, it's all blown up on social media. That's not responding or living in an attitude of love. And I spent 2 weeks in India recently, wonderful, wonderful trip. And our yoga instructor that's with us probably knows this, but you know, when you finish yoga, the yoga instructor always puts their palms together and says, namaste, right? Everybody goes, namaste. Nobody really knows what that means in the US. So I'm in India, and I get there, and everyone that greets you everyone, whether it's a waiter at a restaurant or a friend that you see, whoever it is, they all go namaste right off the bat. And so I thought, well, I want to know what they say that means. And okay. So I started asking around, and in the deepest Hindu tradition, namaste means I acknowledge the divine within you. So if you are greeting someone by saying, I acknowledge the divine within you, it's pretty difficult to have now a controversial or an adversarial interaction, right?
Right.
It's like, I work with veterans all the time who experience hatred, right? And hatred towards the enemies of their country that they have seen do bad things to their friends and other and civilians.
I get that.
So when you think about in a combat situation, which I have not experienced, be right up front about that, but if you're in a fight with somebody else, what's the worst thing you can do? Lose your cool.
Yeah.
Right? You go at them angry and full of hate. You make bad decisions based on emotions.
Yeah.
That may not be in your best interest. You're not thinking clearly.
Right.
But if you can maintain an attitude of love and still be able to put a bullet in the bad guy's head, right? Now you're thinking clearly, calmly, you're making the best possible decisions. And that's that, I suppose, in the Hindu or Buddhist faith, they call it that being able to live in Zen or martial arts talks about mind like water. So the current flows around you, but you let it go past you and you keep your focus. That's the way we got to live. We have to stay above the little petty crap. We got to keep our focus on what we're trying to do personally and professionally and build healthy circles like you're talking about.
Yeah. Because it's such a huge, impactful thing when you have a supportive network around you, a supportive circle, vice and negative ones. I mean, it really just changes everything.
Yeah.
Sucks to be that guy.
Did he have, was that a grocery cart?
Shopping cart.
Shopping cart on the side of the road?
Yeah.
In the middle of the desert?
He's on a journey.
That's intense.
Three millennial would say.
He's on a journey.
Wow. All right.
Hopefully he doesn't die.
Hopefully the shopping cart wasn't full of bodies.
Right. Facebook and Instagram. Neither.
I feel like we're driving into an episode of Breaking Bad or something here.
Right?
We don't have pants hanging from the outside anymore.
This is not the highway. I don't know where we're going. It says we're still on track. So what else happened?
Taking a proverbial shortcut?
Whatever. What else happened in India? Well, some other interesting things that happened that you enjoyed.
Hang on a second, because I'm also, in 15 miles, you're going to turn on I-40, at least according to mine.
21 miles a day on Joss Road.
Let me rephrase this.
Interesting.
If I buy 30 million shares of stock,
we'll have to
get a single penny back each quarter.
So mine looks like that. Looks like we're going to come up and we're doing some sort of a parallel to I-40 thing.
Oh, okay.
But from where you turn, we would have had to drive further south to pick up I-40, so it's probably, with our speed, it's probably 6.5 does the other. Other things about India.
Yeah, you spent 2 weeks there.
Spent 2 weeks and had no idea what I was really getting into. We were invited by a family friend who was getting married. And what's amazing over there, from what I can see, is there are people that live in abject poverty, and there are people that are very well off, and they coexist, and it doesn't look like they are, and maybe it's just where I was at, but they're not, poor people are not jealous and want what the rich people have, and they make the, it looks like they make the very best of what they can with what they have, which is, you know, trying to learn how to be content within the situation that you're in.
Yeah.
Sure.
But at the same time, they work their butt off to try to provide for their families or to try to do a little better. And it's pretty inspirational to see that. It's also the influence of family over there is it's very evident that whether it's a poor family or a well-to-do family, that they stay, they're very tight.
I posted a catfish.
How was the food?
Love the food.
You didn't get any Razul's revenge or anything, did you?
You what?
You didn't get any Razul's revenge, did you?
What's that?
Razul's revenge?
What's another one? Oh, I got you. I didn't get sick.
You didn't get sick?
No. No, well, first off, I made sure all my shots were up to date before I went. to include taking an anti-malarial.
So, and, nice. That's a millennial statement.
And that is, do you know the reason why people get sick over there?
It's the water and vegetables.
The water.
Yeah, water, food, but or fruit.
It's the water.
In the vegetables and fruit, yeah.
Yeah, because the vegetables, you don't want to eat raw fruits and vegetables because you don't know how they were washed.
Yeah.
And the problem with the tap water is, when it comes out of the water purification facilities there, it's drinkable.
Yeah.
But their delivery system is not a pressured delivery system. So if a pipe leaks, it leaks both ways. So
yeah.
It sucks in groundwater contamination.
Yeah.
And it's just not that good, right? I mean, you see people pull a side of the road and they're peeing, right? In the city, they're peeing in a ditch.
Right.
So all that stuff goes into the groundwater, gets into the pipes, and then it's delivered into the homes and faucets. So unless you purify it, you don't want to drink it, so you want to buy bottled water and drink it.
Is that what you did? You just traveled off bottled water?
Yep. Brushed our teeth with bottled water until the last 2 days when we were at the wedding area. It was a little resort area, so it seemed like it was a classier area. Doesn't mean the water was any purer.
But you rolled the dice.
Yeah, well, we're at a wedding, right? There's all the people for the family and all there, and they're bringing out cups of water and fancy glasses, and you don't want to say, can I have a bottle of water, please?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the first day, I just kind of took a few sips. Didn't have any ill effects, so the next day, I was fine. My wife never went that far. She stayed with a couple little sips and then bottle of water. And most of the water that they served was room temperature. So you could politely get away by saying, can I have some chilled water? Because then they have to go get an ice bottle of water. They also, and I didn't realize this was the case, but we were at Vijayawada, we bounced from the New Delhi area, which is kind of north central, to Kerala, which is on the southwestern coast, and then we went to the southeastern coast, where Vijayawada is, and that's where the wedding was.
However you design your corporate structure, each one of the
five states in India is almost autonomous. It has its own language, even though they're kind of based in the same root. One person from India that's from a different state can't understand what somebody from a different state is saying.
Yeah.
And they eat with their fingers. I mean, like messy, sloppy rice, they eat with their fingers. And they'll pour this delicious, usually it's vegetarian because they didn't eat a whole lot of meat. You had to kind of ask for it. And they pour this. And I'm not even trying to say the name of the sauce, I don't remember. But they pour it on the rice, and then they mix it. They like knead it with their fingers, and then they.
I want to be a part of the millions.
They're eating it, and it's dripping down their hands, and I mean, it's a big mess.
Yeah.
But then, always right around the corner, they have a set of faucets and basins set up, so everybody goes and washes.
That was a yoga move.
It looked really cool. It looked like you were like doing the sun pose or whatever.
We had some yoga going on back there because of the driving. It was awesome.
That's not me.
Impromptu yoga.
It's the road. Speaking of driving, how was the driving over there? That video you posted.
Oh my gosh.
Good. That video you posted was hilarious.
Okay. Yeah, the they have traffic laws, but they just don't obey them.
It's a loose guideline.
Oh, well, if you come up to, and I saw this the very first night that I was there riding in a taxi from the airport to a hotel. They come up to a red stoplight. and they just honk their horn and go through. They don't care if cars are coming.
Yeah, right.
They honk and then they just weave in between them. And the other cars honk and everybody honks so they know where everybody else is. And nobody gets any hard feelings about it. They just honk and go. And when you have a... It's funny because you see here on a highway in the U.S., when there's road construction and a two-lane highway goes down to a one-lane highway, right? And you have the merge now sign.
Yeah.
And you always have some dick that is going to run all the way up on the left as far as he can to cut in front of the truck, right, instead of waiting back in line.
Yeah.
And then you have truckers that will weave over to stop you from doing that. Over there, both lanes, they just go all the way up to the front, and then when they get there, they just zipper in. And they honk so everybody knows where everybody else is, but it makes it flow. And you don't... there were times we weren't moving very fast, but we were always moving.
And Sarah was asleep on one of those.
Oh, yeah, she was...
Passed out?
She was getting car sick because we're in this very curvy mountain road where the guy's driving like crazy, and you can see in the video, because he's got a crucifix hanging from his rearview mirror, you can tell how the road is because it's going like this, and it's going like this, and it's like this. And you can see in front of us there's cars and motorcycles, and they're doing this. And so she was getting kind of green at the gills, and finally she just bowed her head over and went to sleep. But I'm sitting behind the driver, and I'm like, there's no way I'm closing my eyes. I don't know
what. Oh, man. So what's up with your book? How do we get it? You can actually get it on the Raider Project site.
There's hard copies available through the Raider Project. I think soft cover, maybe not hard cover. I don't remember what.
No, I think you sent them. I think you sent both.
You can go to Amazon. It is now available in the Kindle format.
Cool.
So I think $7.95 for maybe $8.95 or something like that for a Kindle version of it. But book's been out since November.
What's the premise?
I tell my story. I talk about why I'm doing what I'm doing and how the things that led to there, because I think it's important for people to understand, because I'm not a trained psychologist, I'm not a trained therapist, but I bring a lot of life experience that's very relevant to what we're doing with transitioning veterans.
Yeah.
Some of it is non-military life experience, and some of it's military life experience. And in the book, I talk about examples of veterans I've worked with that some have gone on to really do well, and other ones are still struggling. I talk a lot about how the system has failed some of our veterans. I've worked with veterans from Just Cause and Desert Storm that they're completely left behind by the system now. When the War Project doesn't care about anybody pre-9/11. And Vietnam veterans are still struggling in some cases. And I see a pattern. We talked about the pattern earlier.
Yeah.
In terms of the commonalities of letting your mind sit you into the gutter, doing that downward spiral that results in disaster, whether you're a Vietnam veteran or a Desert Storm or post 9/11, it's all common. Talk about the Gallup Star, how we came about, kind of focusing on emotional, social, spiritual, physical, and professional. And offer solutions for communities.
So if you're a veteran or you're a military service member thinking about getting out,
just hold it down just a little bit. It's hard for me to focus on what we're talking about.
So if you're a veteran and you're or if you're a military service member and you're looking at getting out, probably be a good book to like start with, because it's going to give you a roadmap to some issues that you could be looking at down the road without even knowing it.
Yeah, I think the audience for the book is, if you're getting ready to transition, definitely there's a path there that you need to look at. We talk about the asthma all the time.
Yeah.
Right, you get off asthma. If you're off asthma for a short distance, it's not that big a deal to get back on the right path.
You look right there, it's okay, it's over
Yeah,
there.
But if you're off asthma for
10 years.
Yeah, 10 years or 10 miles if you're doing it on the ground.
You don't even see the objective.
Yeah, you're lost by the time you get there. So, finding that azimuth, staying on it, surrounding yourself with the positive influences that help you stay on it, help you make the right choices. That's hugely important. And there was something you were saying right there a minute ago that I lost that I was going to follow back up on. On the audience.
Yeah.
You know, if you're an active duty person that is a commander or in a non-commissioned officer influential position, you've got soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines that are leaving active duty that you're sending them out unprepared. Because, talk to the camera, you're sending them out unprepared because the military transition system is not adequate for helping them prepare for what they're going to run into when they go home. And the big thing, when you think about somebody leaving Camp Lejeune, how many Marines stay in the Camp Lejeune area when they leave? Well, I'm sure there's some.
Yeah, but not
but how many,
yeah.
Right? So where do they go when they leave?
Right.
They go home. Or they go to the school they want to go to, or they get a job and they go to Kansas City and they go to Dallas and they go to California, you know, four corners of the world. And each one of those communities has a different recipe for success in transition than another one. What works in San Francisco isn't going to work in Dallas necessarily, right? And Detroit's going to be a whole different thing. So how do you know what works in those communities? Well, you turn to the veterans in those communities that have successfully transitioned, and now they own businesses, and they teach, and they are professionals in business. They've transitioned, and they're not. I'm not saying they gotta be super wealthy, but they've achieved a level of stability in their lives, and they have surrounded themselves with a positive circle.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, those are Rotary clubs, and Kiwanis clubs, and church groups, and chambers of commerce. And they're all things that, when that veteran comes back to the community, he or she is, like he said a minute ago, the steps of care, right? Self-care, buddy care, Medicare. So you're trying to do the self-care thing, and you really don't know what's out there that might be able to help you, but you're not going to go ask because now you appear weak by asking. So you're going to continue to try. So you got to be honest about it. I think the majority of veterans come through that okay. They have a hard time. A lot of them have a hard time. I had a hard time, but I came through it okay. And if you look at the people that came through it okay, what are the common influences? That somebody came in alongside them and helped them.
Yeah.
That they trusted, respected, and it was probably somebody that had a military background that was somewhat similar to theirs. So that's why they trusted and respected. So what we've got to do is we've got to make the connections happen where they go to live. And right now it's a push system. Give you a bunch of information. Here's your azimuth. Now go into the night land navigation mode or a foreign country and try and find your own way.
Yeah.
And when you get off azimuth, you don't even know you're off azimuth. But if you get connected with somebody when you get there, now you just had a guy with a flashlight that picks you up in that dark forest and says, here's the way to go. Let's go.
So check it out. Links below. The sun's setting, mine died. Sun's setting, so we're gonna end it.